Hi there. You're listening to Married to the Ministry, which is part of the Love Worth Finding podcast network. If you are a pastor's wife looking for encouragement or for practical wisdom on how to manage all the challenges of your role with a smile on your face, we're so glad you're here. This is your host, Janet Addison, and I'd like to help you embrace truth and delight in your ministry life. I've just made some yummy hot tea, so why don't you grab a cup and let's chat for a while. If your family has ever struggled to make ends meet on a ministry income, then you're going to want to listen to this episode. Today, I'm talking with financial expert and best-selling author, Rachel Cruz. Rachel and her father, Dave Ramsey, teach people how to win with money, how to avoid debt, how to spend wisely, and how to save for the future. So join in my conversation with Rachel as she encourages us and offers some smart money tips that can help your family find financial peace. Well, hello, Rachel Cruz. Thank you so much for joining us on Married to the Ministry today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I have been a fan of your dad's for years, actually worked with him on a board years ago. And then when my husband was at Bellevue, he coordinated some events with your dad. And so I know that y'all are in churches a lot. You're working with church people and church staff a lot. So I thought for the benefit of all of our pastors' wives and possibly their husbands who may be listening with them, I wanted you maybe to just talk a little bit about the financial areas that y'all see ministry couples really struggling with the most.
Yeah, you know, it's money's such an interesting topic. You know, when we talk about this, even people that are, you know, in a faith walk and even those that aren't, you know, it's funny that the problems and the struggles seem to be universal with just people, us just here trying to handle money. And obviously through a faith perspective, we have a lens that we look through and how we make decisions. But I mean, a lot of the problems is what most everyone faces. And so when you're with a, you know, with a couple specifically that's married, you know, it is the idea that opposites attract. And so for a lot of couples, one wants to be more on the conservative end and wants to save. The other one wants to spend and enjoy. One of them loves talking about a budget and doing a budget. And the idea of getting in control of their money sounds so exciting and wonderful. And the other one is like, oh gosh, no. Like,
so
I don't want to do that. Yeah, that's right. So that opposite way of your personality, I think how you're wired, how you're created, honestly, can come in conflict with each other if you don't know how, number one, to communicate it effectively. Number two, have a plan to be able to overcome those differences and work as a team, even though you are so different. And then honestly, thirdly, is a level of humility to look at each other and say, gosh, I could actually learn something from you. Like there's something that you have in the way you view the subject that I don't. And there's wisdom in that. And I want to learn that. And to be that for each other, I think is big. Because I think money can separate people so easily instead of unifying them. And I think there's a level of humility there to say, yeah, I can actually learn from my spouse and what they have to offer me.
What kind of encouragement can you give people that just aren't making a lot of money and aren't going to be making a lot of money? You know, a lot of people, yes, you start out not making much and you can make more by, you know, getting more education or switching to a different place. But
right,
lots of times in ministry, you just don't have that ladder to climb like,
yep,
the secular, yep, world would offer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, when I think about money, really those two flows of which money flows is important. So money comes in, money goes out, right? And so that first piece is the income piece, like what you're talking about. And what's hard is we talk to a lot of people. And again, you could put this at any, you know, level of profession that just doesn't make a ton, but specifically, you know, with ministry. And for me, I'm like, you know, maybe there is a season where there is have to be extra income supplemented somewhere at some level, right? And I wouldn't want that forever to sustain a life, because at that point, you know, whether it's a decision of like, oh my gosh, our family, we can't eat. It's like, we don't,
right,
have money, right, for food. And so those conversations have to happen, because what's difficult too is is money doesn't have emotion. Math, you know, doesn't have emotion. So even talking to people in California that have like a crazy standard of living and they want, you know, their house to be 60% of their income and that's what goes to their mortgage or their rent, we're like, it's not sustainable, right? Just the math side. And so I do think for people that don't have that ladder to climb, you have to be able to say, okay, what's plan B? Because that income part of it, it has to be there. And so you have to be able to say, okay, what are creative ways, things that we can do to help control that side? And then also looking at the output and the outgo, which is the expenses.
Because that's the part you can control, really.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, but food, shelter, utilities, transportation, that may cover it for what people make. And what's hard is that there's not that margin then to feel like, okay, we can go and enjoy, or we can, you know, go and go X, you know, go to a place for a vacation or whatever it may be. And so what I would say is those are the two factors of money that you really do have to look at, because, you know, regardless of whether you're in ministry or you're a public servant, you know, being a police officer or whatever it may be, the math has to work. You have to be able to buy that food, right? And so looking at those two parts of the equation are really key. And so maybe there's seasons where that tightens up on one side or the other, or more income is brought in on one side or the other. Yeah, I mean, this is always a difficult subject. It really is, because it's such a higher calling, right? Everyone in ministry,
well, that's
it is such
true.
A higher calling.
Then you've got the spiritual layer on top of it. If we're serving God and God has called us into ministry and sacrificial, well, what does that say about me spiritually if I feel like this is not enough money? Or, you know, so you've got that extra sense of obligation or responsibility or ungratefulness, I guess, if you think, well, I'm not getting paid enough, but
right,
this is where
yeah.
God has called us. So what am I supposed
yes,
to do
yes.
with that?
Yeah. And that's a hard conviction to grapple with, right? I mean, that is a legitimate, you know, way of looking at it. And I guess on my side of the table, because we work with so many churches and so many people. I mean, the church, the local church is something obviously as a believer that is so just near and dear to my heart. And so seeing that, but also I can say as just a member of a church, we don't want our pastors to suffer. We don't want to see that. And so, and that's a call out, obviously not necessarily to the audience of this podcast, but those of you that are consistent with having a local church and you call yourself a believer, giving has to be a part of it. And that's a huge part of our message, is that the tithe, that 10%, and people that are not of faith, you know, we say just give anywhere. It doesn't matter. But if you call yourself an evangelical Christian and you're part of the local church, that 10% off the top, like it's a requirement. It's one of those things. I don't want to be legalistic about it, but it is one of those things. And that helps obviously to a degree open up, you know, somewhat of the gates there for administration to actually get paid to a degree, to, you know, get paid better. But no, I would want to free people to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not content, or I'm complaining, if you are at a point financially that it's hard to pay the light bill, right? I mean, like you're not asking above and beyond, in my opinion, at that
right,
point.
Right, those aren't luxuries. Feeding
that's
your
right,
children,
that's right. Yeah,
taking them to the doctor, those aren't luxuries.
Yeah, that's
items.
Right, that's right. Those are needs that your family has. And so if that stress is there, that's not a discontentment. That's a level of actually living and surviving.
Well, and it's back to the math, like you were talking about earlier.
Yes, yes, yep.
Well, you said, you know, there's the two sides of it, the income and the outgo. So let me talk about the outgo at first. Lots of times, if you don't make much money, people might think, well, I don't have enough money to budget. So why do I need to budget when there's not that much to begin with? What would you say? I imagine you have some things to say about people who think they don't need to budget.
Yes. Yeah, I would say if you feel like your money is tight, that's even more reason to budget, because it is amazing how life just occurs and things just happen throughout the day, throughout the week, and you don't realize where your money's going if you don't have a plan. And to be able to know, okay, this is exactly where my money is going. And, you know, and as believers, we see ourselves as stewarding what God has given us, that we're just managing it for Him. And so if you are managing money for a company, you would manage it well because you have a boss that you have to report to, you know, and in the same way, you could have that same role symbolizing us with our money, that you want to be a good steward of that. And for me, that means being intentional with where every penny, every dollar is going. And so, you know, we teach zero-based budgeting, which I think is probably the most effective way to budget. Mm-hmm, and that's your income for the month. That's, you get out a sheet of paper and you can just do this, right? At the top, and then minus all of your expenses, including giving and saving, should equal zero. So every dollar that's coming in, it's assigned somewhere to the give, to the save, to the bills, to the cell phone, to the insurance, like wherever it's going, you know where your money's going. And that honestly gives people a lot of peace because you actually have control over, okay, when the money hits my accounts, I'm the one telling it where to go. And we are deciding before we're in the moment where our money's going. And so that helps already make decisions. And we're talking about married couples at the front end of this podcast. Same thing. That really alleviates so many money fights and money problems with couples because you actually have a plan together.
That you agreed on together.
Yeah, that you agree on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, here's our roadmap for the month when it comes to our money. And we hear this all the time too, that people feel like they got a raise when they do a budget because they're like, oh my gosh, we actually were spending so much more money going out to eat and didn't realize it. You know, the Chick-fil-A drive-through that we swing through. We don't realize how much it just adds up, these day-to-day decisions. And so when you have a budget, it is your guideline to where your money goes. So I would, highly recommend anyone and everyone, regardless of where you are, income-wise or debt level or anything, to be intentional with that. Because I think budgeting is it's one of the biggest mistakes people make with money is that they're not intentional. And so the budget is being intentional.
Well, I know years ago when we first met your dad and started doing the cash envelope zero-based budgeting system, we were shocked at how much, I know my husband would call it, we were hemorrhaging money. You know, it was just leaking out and we didn't realize it. And when you recapture that, you realize, okay, I was really careless and sloppy. And when you're careful and intentional, like you said, you really can make the most of what you have, even if what you have is not as much as you wish it was.
Yes, yes, yes. No, you're exactly right. And it is. It's kind of this accountability moment too, where you're like, oh wow, okay, here it is. This is what we see. And even going back, if you've never done a budget before, go back to last month's, you know, your bank account last month and just write down all of that and put it into categories. And you'll start to realize, oh my gosh, it does add up. You know, as much as we wish that it didn't, and the $3 coffees or the subscription, the 3 or 4 or 11 subscriptions that we have, you know, over time, it will all pile up.
Well, and I know in Financial Peace, y'all talk about the emotional, you know, when you pay with cash, it hurts you intellectually and emotionally more than when you give a card. And now that you are even tapping a card, which takes a second, you don't even have to stick it in or slide it anymore. That's even less of a mental awareness of that was just $12 or $32 or however much. So
sure.
I think the more detached we get from the way we pay,
yes,
you forget, oh yeah, I forgot I bought that coffee or the Chick-fil-A or whatever you're talking about.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, with a debit card, there's some level of emotion knowing that money's coming out of my account. There's a level of emotion there, but especially with a credit card where you're using someone else's money, you won't see the bill for 28 days. You know, like there is a complete detachment. And you do with a credit card, you end up spending anywhere from 12 to 18% more on a credit card because of exactly what you're saying. There's no emotion. And then, yeah, you got the tap or the Apple Pay on the phone and you just double click on your phone. Right. I mean, like it is wild. We ordered pizza the other night for our family and I have an app for the pizza place and we did it and you double click and the pizza shows up and you're like, that was so seamless. And they know what they're doing. It's convenient, right? Like
it's
great.
It didn't hurt you to pay for it.
But you're not feeling all of that emotion. And so, yeah, if you can go to the cash envelope system for a season, I recommend people do that and do it maybe just for your groceries, personal, maybe pick, you know, 3 or 4 categories and especially food, groceries and out to eat. If you can do that, I mean, those are the biggest budget busters always for people and including my family. It's so bad. We I'm like, Costco. I'm like, just take my 401k. That's what it feels like. You're just
went
like, oh my gosh.
Went there yesterday, and I always have to say, well, wait a minute, let me add that back up, because I didn't realize I was going to be spending that much.
Yeah, I totally, yes. I know.
Well, that is the outgo side. Let's talk a minute about the income side. And I know, you know, side hustles are a huge, everybody's got a side hustle these days. But so many ministry families live in rural areas or small towns, or, you know, they don't have Uber that they can drive, or, you know, Instacart doesn't deliver in their area. So what are some ideas for bringing in extra income, especially if you don't live in a bigger city?
Yes. That's where I would really honestly put so much of my weight on the internet, because there's just so many ways to make money, whether it's being, you know, a virtual assistant, whether it's starting something online, a class, maybe something that you've learned in your life. I mean, there's so many ways to make money from virtual opportunities as well. And that's where I would probably bank a lot of my money, is to be able to say, okay, I'm going to go and find something that I'm already good at, right? Is there something that you're already naturally gifted at? And even people that turn their hobbies into a side business. I mean, that happens a lot. I mean, it's everything from baking to hair bows to,
my daughter's got an Etsy store, and she sells a lot of her stuff.
Yes.
that she enjoys making.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's finding creative ways. And I know it's difficult. I know we're talking specifically to pastors' wives, and I'm like, I'm a mom of three little ones, and life is tiring. I'm like, it is. I would rather, on a personal note, I'm like, it's easier for me to cut expenses than to think, okay, what's a way to make some extra money, right? Mm-hmm. Because the time aspect as a mom, it's just not there. And then at the end of the day, by the time everyone goes to bed, it's 8 o'clock and you're exhausted. So that's where if that is going to be part of your life for a season, have it be a season and say, okay, I'm going to do this for 6 months. We're going to do it through the summer, beginning of school year, and by October, I'm going to be done. Like, right?
And
like,
maybe earmark that money that you're bringing in for a specific bill or a specific item, so it doesn't get lost and frittered away.
Very much so. Yeah, be very specific, because that's precious cash that's been coming in from your hard work, right? So,
So
making sure that, and that's part of having the plan. It's like, okay, is this money going to getting us out of debt? Is this money going to an emergency fund so we actually have some cushion and some breathing room? Like, where is this going to be going? And again, the goal is that your lifestyle is to a point that your main source of income can supplement that. But it's these side things, goals that people have, whether it's for, you know, replacing a car, again, getting out of debt, like, right, these other money goals they have, that's really where the side hustle can jumpstart a lot of this, especially if there's no margin on just the main source of income.
Housing these days is a problem for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem if, like, for example, you've been at a church and you had a parsonage provided, but then you switch jobs to a church that doesn't have a parsonage and you have to come up with a down payment, or, you know, and nobody's salaries escalate at the rate that housing has gone up recently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are some ways that we should approach the issue of finding affordable living arrangements?
Yeah, I would say I would put the whole idea of owning a home to the side for a minute, because I think everyone wants to jump right into home ownership. And to your point, I mean, it's insane. It's insane right now. And if you can't afford it, and again, I would say this to anyone across the board, don't do it. It's going to stress you out. If you go and you put nothing down on a house, you get, you know, a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, which is what a lot of people do. And even still, that payment is taking, you know, 30, 40, 50% of your income. It's hard to do other things with your income because it's mostly all just going straight to housing. So, well, I would recommend renting for a season and make it a goal to get a down payment of at least 5%. And again, that may take you 4 or 5 years. But that's okay. And our world, how quickly things shift. I'm like, you know, I mean, whether it's election years, whether it's, you know, a recession that happens, you know, that we went through in 07, 08, 09, things just change so quickly. And home ownership is something I think is important for everyone and their full financial picture in a perfect world, but it doesn't have to be immediate. And I think people just jump into the idea that I have to get this. So what I would say, if I was switching jobs, I would be looking around at rentals. whether it's, you know, condos, homes, apartments, whatever your situation is that you can have. And again, I don't know how realistic it is, but in this seat on this side of the table, I would bring that then to my upcoming, you know, church that I'm working at and saying, in order to be able to live here, we have to be able to make rent. We have to be able to have this, right? I mean, I think there are this level of like, we have to live somewhere.
That should be a conversation during the interview process.
I would, yes, just to say, hey, this is where we were financially before this move. And now that a housing expense is now included, this is a realistic thing. And again, and most people in ministry, I'm like, it's not this extravagant, like you're not being, in my opinion, you're not being high maintenance in that. You're just surviving. Mm-hmm. You know, you want a place to live, which has to be a part of this plan. And in order to do that, what does that look like for you and your family? And let that be a conversation point back and forth. That's what I would do personally, because if I have to protect my kid, I mean, I have to have a place for my kids and my family. And so that's not unreasonable to ask that or to talk through that.
We've never been in a parsonage, but I know a couple of years ago we were in the Little Rock, Arkansas area, and we moved to Nashville. And just the housing cost difference,
yes,
was staggering, as you well know, since you live there. You know, and that was a huge faith jump and financial commitment. You know, so lots of people, you know, people coming from California can sell and then come to Arkansas and have gobs and gobs of money left over. But yep. If you're not going that direction, you know, even if you're not leaving a parsonage, just a change of location.
Absolutely.
And the demographics yep. And all that can be very
painful.
Which
I think for your family, too, you know, that's a point to be able to say, you know, is this specifically where we're being called to, right? And I think faith plays a big part in this too. I always hesitate to go any level of a prosperity, you know, idea, because I think there are mountains that God doesn't move in our lifetime, right? And we that suffering is part of our story and where He has us. But I do believe He provides in the way that He's going to provide. But I don't want people to be irresponsible with that either. And again, sitting on this side of the table, you know, we've run into situations with people and they're just praying and praying and praying and praying and praying. It doesn't come to fruition. And they're, you know, on the verge of bankruptcy because there's, you know what I mean? And so there has to be decisions that we have the free will to make in our life and with our life and our family that, again, I think are reasonable and not being, it's not this level, oh, I don't depend on God for everything, or it's not that I'm not leaning on Him. It's that I'm being wise with what He's given me. He's given me a heart. He's given me a mind, and I'm going to make wise decisions in this and what He's calling me to. So yeah, if you know, are moving to LA from Little Rock and going to a church in LA and you want to buy a home, it's probably not realistic. Like that's probably not what's going to happen. Right. So I think that reality is true for anyone, regardless of sphere of career or job or ministry. And I want people to look at that and to know, okay, if this is what we're choosing to walk into, we're going to choose that because we really do believe that this is where God's calling us, but it may look different.
Okay. Another issue that I think we face probably more than the average bear is job insecurity. It's a big deal in ministry because I don't know if you know this about church people, but sometimes it doesn't take a whole lot to upset them. And their natural reaction is, well, let's get rid of him and find somebody else. So a lot of jobs end unexpectedly, prematurely, in a hostile type, you know, have a very difficult, ugly end.
So sad.
Yes, sad. It is. And when your budget is already tight and your, you know, income is less maybe than you want it to be. How do we plan adequately for times? I mean, we have faced unexpected unemployment.
Yeah.
And praise the Lord, we had an emergency fund. And you don't ever want to have to use it, but you sure want it when you need it. So how can people adequately prepare for seasons of unexpected unemployment when your money is already stretched pretty thin?
Yes. I mean, the first place is exactly what you said, is I would find any amount of margin and build up an emergency fund. That would be the first thing that I do. Because like you said, if something happens, then you're able to fall back onto that. And that can, you know, float you for a month, 2 months, 3 months. So that's where I would start, is that. And then, you know, if you find yourself in that position that it's happened, there is this point of like, any job is a job, right? And for a season, there may be a time that you're not back in ministry because there's a bridge, there's something, you know, a season that is in between, but you have to make money. And again, I say this to even someone on the Ramsey show that calls in and they've been working somewhere and they got fired. And they're like, well, what do? I need a job in the same industry. I'm like, no, you need a job today because your mortgage is due and you don't have money saved. So like, you got to go to Target, you like whatever it is.
Stock,
you
know, shelves at Walmart. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You got to have some level of income. And again, it may not be the job that you want long-term, but it's a job. So if that has to be the bridge for a season, then I'm all about that. I'm like, that is what you have to do in that sense. But I think in a wise lens to be able to look through and say, okay, we have money saved, we have money set aside, which is that emergency fund. And I would work towards that because like you said, I'm like, golly, you can make some lady mad. And then the next day you get called in, right? I'm like, it's pretty wild. But that's how fluid it is. So sadly in the church, but yeah, to be able to say that you have that level of security of that emergency fund, I think is important.
A little while ago, you mentioned, you know, and your dad says this all the time on the show, money is math. We need to take the emotions out of it. And we're so caught up in trying to have what other people have, where we put ourselves in the position of being influenced just by watching influencers on Instagram. And,
right.
You know, and so much of our money problems come from an emotional deficit or whatever, especially when you're in ministry and everybody knows your business. Lots of times everybody in the church knows how much money you make. They know where you live. They know what kind of car you drive. That is an awkward place to be. And emotionally speaking, you feel guilty or scared of what are people going to think if I buy this, or, you know, those kind of things. What wisdom do you have for having the courage, I guess, to live like nobody else, even when everybody knows your business?
So easier said than done. I mean, there's a point that you're like, I'm not going to make anyone happy. Like, I'm not going to make everybody happy. That's not why I was put on this planet, because everybody comes at money and at situations through their own perspective, their own story, their own hurt, their own pain. And most of the time when it is that level of reaction towards something that you're not doing anything to that person. It's just you live in your life and then other people are here in the background, whether it's pointing fingers or judging. In my head, that has so much more to do with them. Because if you can't see somebody in ministry and they're winning, or they're able to take their family to the beach for a week, or they drive a decent car, like whatever it is, and you can't applaud that and be so thankful that they're taken care of, like, to me, there's a level there that is not a pretty part of their heart, in my opinion. And so I think it says more about them than about you and your decisions. And what sucks, Janet, can I say that on this podcast?
Yes, you can.
Is that I'm like, the people that are literally giving their lives away and serving people in their community are the ones that get run down the most. And it is so frustrating to sit there. And I'm like, so there's this point that you have to know, I'm not going to make everybody happy. You're not being unwise, right? I'm like, and there is some extravagantness in the Christian community that some people may be like, ooh, that's a lot, right? And we could go down that debate. I mean, but just for the average person, the average pastor out there who's living their life, and maybe you have been wise with your money and you're able to enjoy some of it, run and do that. Because you know who doesn't care? God. Because you've been faithful in so many things. And scripture is so clear about this, that you're faithful in the little, right? And he's going to give you more to manage. And so there's this element for me that you have to do that. And again, totally not in the same column. So I don't want to say, oh my gosh, I totally understand where people are coming from, because I'm not married to a pastor. Yeah, that is not my role. But even within Ramsey and my parents, right? You know, people, I mean, there's blogs about mom and dad's old house that they built. And I look, they, you know, they built it off the backs of poor people telling them bad financial advice, right? So like he gets drugged down in that. And it's so funny talking to my dad because he's like, after he went bankrupt, he's like, I literally don't care what people think anymore. Like it's like between me and God, right? At that point, I mean, having good people in your life to bounce ideas off of and big purchases, I think is wise. But at the end of the day, I'm like, you're not being unwise with that. Like, you know, it is, it's just a shame that that's how people are. And the fact that people, yeah, like you said, know what you make. I mean, all of it, you're just like, oh man.
Yeah.
So wrong as, I mean, as so much many as you levels. Can, yeah. Yes. So, again, easier said than done, but there has to be this point. And I even think about this in my own life. That I'm like, I'm just not going to make everybody happy. And as a somewhat of a people pleaser that wants to be liked, that's a hard way to grapple with it, but it's just the truth. So I wish I could release so many people into being able to make decisions and enjoy their life when they have the ability to, than worry about what Bob and Cindy are thinking at the church, right?
And I know you learned a lot from your parents about good versus poor money decisions and things. From a pastor's family perspective, how do you raise your children? And I'm thinking too from a mom perspective.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How do you raise your children in a household where there's not a whole lot of money for extras? So what are some ways that we can help our children understand that, you know, God gives us all different amounts and this is what he's given us now, you know?
Yes. You know, I always go back to, and I heard this years ago, and now as a mom with little ones, I think it is so true. I think, yes, we all want actual, you know, things, right? I mean, even as adults, it's like, yeah, we want a new car. We want that purse or whatever, like whatever it is, like we want things. And so our kids, they're going to have that too. And as a parent, what I've realized is that the stuff that money can't buy are the things in life that I value so much, which is relationships, my faith, my passion for my job and my career, like these things that money, you can't buy these things. And for me, that's where I have found the most joy, the most satisfaction in our world today. And so pivoting that to my kids to say, yeah, you know, the fact that you want what, you know, Sarah has at school, I get that. Totally. Mom wants what, you know, neighbor has. I mean, like, I get that. That is so true. And that's okay. Like, I mean, we're all going to want stuff. And I get that you want that. But so the idea that you want something, that's not, to me, like there's not necessarily a level of wrong, but what ends up happening is when that spirit changes to jealousy or envy, I want to refocus. I'm saying this to myself about myself, refocus to, hey, what are the things that money can't buy? And where can we put our time and our energy on that? Because with kids, so much of what they want is mom and dad. Like they want us, you know, and I hate to say it. I'm like, we're doing a digital detox at our church right now during this month. And I'm like, how many times have my kids just seen the top of my head with me just looking down on my phone, right? I mean, like there are so many distractions that we have in our life. And I think for our kids, they long for a relationship with us. They long to know that we see them. Like they long to spend time together. I'm like, you know, and it's silly stuff, Janet. Like we took our kids to a parking lot and they rode bikes. We did it for like 2 hours and they still talk about it. It was like back at Thanksgiving. And I'm like, just riding bikes around an empty parking lot.
That didn't
like
cost you anything.
No. And so again, but that goes back to the stuff that money can't buy is what brings us so much satisfaction. So if there are ideas or places you can take them, a hike or like whatever the thing is that you can do as a family that reinvigorates that idea of, you know, stuff is not bad. We're not going to just shame them. Like you shouldn't care, you know, what they have. I get that. I feel that sometimes, right? So I think there's a level of affirming like, yeah, I mean, we're human. We're all human here. But where do we want to put our time and our energy and what's realistic for our family in this season to do that? So I don't know if that helps, but I think that's kind of where we start to shift our kids and, you know, the want, I want, I want, I want. And it's like, okay, let's go do something with us where I'm not on my phone and my husband's not distracted on his computer, you know, but we're actually engaging That's really what they want. And then I think number two is the example. And I really believe this, and I'm seeing this so much with my own kids, is what we live out, what Winston, my husband and I, what we live out, what we value, how we live our lives, that is mirrored so much in my kids and what they believe and how they believe life should be lived. And when we're kind to people, when we are giving, when I don't go and Amazon every single day and an Amazon box shows up, which happens in seasons, right? Like when I model this other life for them of contentment and generosity and kindness to people and to the waiter or the Sonic guy, we went and got Sonic, and you know, I had a big dollar bill, $100 bill, and I let my 8-year-old give it to the car hop. And I'm like, I want you to experience this. Like, let's live these principles out in my own life and in my husband's life, and let them start to experience some of that as well. I think that example and their baseline for what's normal and what should be expected is there. And I love that you said, yeah, not waving the white flag of, oh, we're in ministry. And in that same way, I do encourage parents sometimes in our world to say, oh, it's not in the budget. It's not in the budget. I'm like, don't make the budget the bad guy, but say, hey, we've planned for our money. And for right now, this is the truth of where it is. So let's figure out a way maybe to save for it, maybe delay some of that gratification. It's not a no forever and ever, but maybe we make a plan and say, okay, let's see if we can save, or maybe you can do some babysitting here or there, or like whatever the thing is that we can work towards it, I think is another great avenue too. But
well, and that really, those principles are truth regardless of what profession you're in, regardless of what financial bracket you're in, because
yes,
even if you make a lot of money, you're just going to want more expensive perks and toys and things. So
yep, it just goes up.
And I do vividly remember my dad did not make very much money. He was a government employee, but I remember every Sunday morning him sitting at the kitchen table writing out the tithe check. Every Sunday morning, he did it right there in front of all of us, so we knew, even though my dad's not a doctor, we don't have tons of money.
Yep.
He's obeying the Lord and giving, yep. And that established in me, there's no way that I would not tithe, you know. So.
And isn't that interesting, too, just the baseline of the norm?
Yeah.
Like for you growing up, it's like, that's just what you do. Like, right, you don't really question it until maybe you become an adult and you actually start, you're like, oh, people don't do this. But like, when you set that norm for your kids, like that's such a gift where they don't think twice about it. That's just what you do, right?
And well, I think, and especially in today's world where so many of your bills are automatically drafted out of your account, and the kids have no idea what you're, you know, maybe some things we be intentional, like you mentioned earlier, about that kind of thing. You know, I'm going to write a check and put it in the church offering envelope so you see me doing it.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Take some of the inconvenience of life in order to actually let your kids visually see things, I think is so great. Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
I know everybody knows who your dad is. They've all heard of Financial Peace or Dave Ramsey, even if they've never gone through one of y'all's programs. Where would you advise people to start if they want to learn? Like, and I've been listening, you know, I listened to your dad for years on the radio, and back when it was real talk radio, you know, in the afternoon for 3 hours and my kids were in the car. Now it's podcasting and all that, which are free, which is wonderful that you can get so much information really for free. Yeah. Where would you recommend people starting if they want to develop some smarter money strategies for their family?
Yes. I think, you know, the podcast or YouTube is a great place just to have on in the background. If you're going to be listening to something, it's a good means to get some questions answered of people calling in.
Now, which podcast? Like, so I know you have one, and does your dad have, is his a podcast too?
Yep. So the Ramsey Show is the big one. So I would probably, I'd probably recommend that one for now. I have a podcast once a week that comes out, and I just give some tips on everything from grocery shopping to, how to pay off your mortgage faster. I mean, it's all kind of more tip based. So that's the Rachel Cruze Show. So you can check that out. But honestly, I would just even go to RamseySolutions.com, and we have a great get started kind of guide to help people if you're starting from the very beginning, because we have the 7 baby steps. And it's our step-by-step process, our guide to help you get in control of your money. And again, kind of, I mean, really regardless of how you're making your money, but it really is, it's biblically based, common sense, and the baby steps is where I would start.
Okay, I can put a link for that in the show notes.
Oh, great. And then we have a budgeting app called Every Dollar, and there's a free version in the app store. So even download that and start your first budget and start working your way in that. That's a great foundational first step, is the budget.
Well, thank you. I knew you were going to have lots of wonderful things to say.
I just want to, encourage all of the wives listening. I mean, I know, it's a hard thing to be in ministry. Like what we were saying earlier, I'm like, people are just so critical. And sadly, I hate that the church has, at times that's the thing that can bubble up. So just hear from somebody that goes to her local church with her family that we so appreciate the work that you're choosing to do. You're being obedient to the calling in your life, and that comes with sacrifice. But also know that work is helping so many people. And as a wife of a pastor, whether you're doing ministry side by side with your husband or maybe not, you are such a support system to him as well. And you have the ability to even take some of this and say, hey, we could start some new habits in our household. What does this look like? And because it takes two to be a great team. And so there's a lot of strength that a lot of pastors' wives have. And so I just really commend the role that you guys play in life. It's a big one. It really is.
Well, where can people connect with you or follow you? Or
yeah, so on all the socials, so Facebook, Instagram, I'm there. My show's on YouTube, and my podcast, The Rachel Cruze Show, is there. And I have another one I host with one of our other Ramsey personalities called Smart Money Happy Hour. And it's more kind of current events, pop culture based. And it's really fun. It's a fun one.
Yeah, so we listen to some of those.
Win people over that people that don't want to handle money right now very well. And they're like, I don't know if I want to get into this. That's a good entry point, I could say, is that podcast.
And I see you have your children's book behind you there in the screen. So tell us about your books.
Yes. So I'm glad for what I have. It's my first children's book. It came out in November. And it was just near and dear to my heart. Kind of the topics we were talking about today, teaching my kids contentment and what that looks like, that having stuff, it's not wrong, but it's not going to fulfill us the way we think it will. And, who God is in our lives and his love ultimately is that. And so I wanted I wanted it to be very whimsical. And, I wanted animals in the book, and I wanted beautiful illustrations, and it's short. So you're welcome, all the parents out there. It is a short kids book. And it's one at the end. It's a message that I need for my life, honestly, because when I wrote it, I was like, I know the books I read to my kids and the ones that have a lesson at the end for my kids, but also it like hits me right in the heart. Mm-hmm. Those are the books I personally love to read to my kids. So I wanted this book to be that. So well, the message is for everyone.
I have a copy of it and I can't wait till I can read it to my grandson, but the art is beautiful and it is a sweet story and it's a timeless truth that we need to share. So I'm absolutely glad for what I have is the name of that. Well, thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being a faithful member of your local church.
I've said that a few times.
Yeah, because
I do love the local church. I love it. I know. It has its marks, things that we all kind of are like, man, usually about the people. That's what's hard about it.
Yes.
Oh, these
I don't
people,
know how Jesus puts
people.
Up with us sometimes.
I know.
But
I
as
know.
A pastor's wife, there's nothing more meaningful than people who come to church and people who serve and people who give and support their pastor. So, and that's one thing that I really do appreciate how Ramsey Solutions does business is y'all are very pro church and very pro faith. And it's just a powerful platform God has given y'all to talk to the entire world about something everybody struggles with. And you do it from a biblical, perspective and foundation.
Yes.
So thank you.
Yeah, we kind of joke internally at Ramsey that, we bring people in for the money, but we trick them because they really hopefully will meet Jesus in the process too. So it's beautiful. We love it.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Rachel. Appreciate you being with us.
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, if you'd like to learn how to be smarter with your money, I'll put links in the show notes so you can find Rachel Cruze's podcast and her other resources. Do you have a pastor's wife friend who might could use some of these tips we talked about today? Why don't you tell her about this episode of Married to the Ministry? All of us need wisdom on managing well what God gives us. Next time, I'll be sharing some money-saving hacks that Greg and I have learned over the years, so I hope you'll join me for that. But until then, let's keep loving Jesus, loving our husbands, and loving our people.